Philippines begins the second phase of its COVID-19 vaccination for minors. We'll get live updates from our correspondents in Marikina and Malabon. The country's health chief warns the public against gathering in huge numbers as this could lead to another COVID-19 surge. Dr. Maricar Limpin of the Philippine College of Physicians joins us later for a discussion on that. And formerly pharmaceuticals executive Mohit Dargani accuses the Senate of treating them like criminals. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the midday news, the Philippine government begins the second phase of pediatric COVID-19 vaccinations today, Friday. And under this second phase, each local government unit in Metro Manila will be allowed to administer vaccines to children aged 12 to 17 years old with comorbidities. Around 144,000 minors are expected to be vaccinated during the pilot run. Meantime, some local government units want teens with no comorbidities to already be included in the rollout, especially now that the country has millions of vaccine supplies.
Ginawa natin alert level 3 na kung saan pinapayagan na rin natin yung mga intra-interzonal travel for all ages. Kaya kailangan na rin ng mga kabataan yung protection dyan sa bakuna. Makakatulong din bilang preparasyon natin sa pagbubukas ng klase para sa mga face-to-face classes natin.
We are trying to convince the NITAG to make this more accelerated, considering that in opening up our vaccination for children, we can sustain and achieve yung 1.5 million per day job. Nakikita namin na very eager na yung mga families, and also the mothers and the parents are really rearing to have their children vaccinated. Ang sabi nga namin, may kulot sa puso yan ng mga magulang. And we are confident na even dun sa mga regional hubs natin, they are more than willing to vaccinate already 12 and 17 and above.
Some health experts urging the Philippine government to fast-track the approval of COVID-19 booster shots. This is to avoid wasting vaccines with hundreds of thousands of Moderna jabs purchased by the private sector set to expire on November 27th.
I think the government has to explain, because I don't understand it myself, why they do not allow the use from the private sector who purchase their vaccines individually to utilize now that particular purchase on their own. I don't know if there's a legal explanation to it, that the manufacturer who has sold it to them disallows their use of that vaccine if they got a purchase from the government.
But Presidential Advisor for Entrepreneurship Joey Concepcion says the vaccines will not go to waste since they may soon be administered to children of private sector employees.
We had to finish the two pilot tests that were conducted with the 12 to 17-year-old. It's not too late. I mean, November, we can start jabbing the first dose, and we will be able to consume all of those soon to expire, but it's not really very, it's still on November 27. I was also reassured by Secretary Galvez that they will just replace this, no? And that's not a problem.
Right.
But the demand is there, we just have to implement it. No?
In the United States, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends booster shots for recipients of Moderna's and Johnson & Johnson's vaccines. This is aligned with the Food and Drug Administration's authorization, clearing those two vaccine brands for use as boosters. The CDC's director reiterated, all vaccines authorized in the U.S. are highly effective in reducing the risk of hospitalization and death, even with a Delta variant. So far, about 11.6 million Americans have received a booster dose. Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech make the case for wider adoption of their COVID-19 vaccine booster following results of a phase 3 trial showing its high efficacy even against the Delta variant. Let's get the details in this report.
On the fence about getting a COVID-19 vaccine booster shot, this might help. Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech said results from a late-stage clinical trial demonstrated a 95.6% efficacy rate of guarding against the virus, including the highly virulent Delta variant. The trial results released Thursday were based on a study of 10,000 participants, 16 years old and older. Among those who got the booster shot, only 5 came down with COVID-19, compared to the placebo group, which saw 109 cases of the disease. The vaccine makers said the median time between the second dose and the booster shot, or the placebo, in the study was around 11 months. The two companies say they will submit data from the trial to the FDA, the European Medicines Agency, and other regulatory agencies as soon as possible. Booster shots from the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and the Moderna vaccine have been approved in the U.S. and Europe for older populations and for those who are immunocompromised. The FDA also gave the green light on an extra shot of the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine and said Americans can choose a different shot from their original inoculation as a booster.
Reporting isolated cases of a more contagious Delta subvariant. A senior researcher from the state's consumer watchdog says the AY4.2 subvariant may be 10% more transmissible than the original Delta variant. That variant has pushed infections and deaths to record highs across the world. The Delta subvariant is also on an upward trajectory in the UK. The UK's health minister, however, says there's no reason yet to believe it poses a greater threat than the Delta variant. India administers its 1 billionth COVID-19 vaccine dose as it fights its way back from a devastating surge in cases. But as this report tells us, authorities remain on guard for another wave of the pandemic.
India is celebrating the milestone of administering 1 billion COVID-19 vaccine doses with a song and dance. The government on Thursday promoted the achievement with musical and other programs across the country and special illuminations of national monuments, even as a recent drop in inoculations worries healthcare providers. Prime Minister Narendra Modi marked the occasion by meeting staff at a hospital in New Delhi.
October 21st, 2021. Has been scripted in history as India has crossed the 1 billion mark of administering COVID-19 vaccine doses.
100 crore vaccine dose ka aankda paar kar liya hai. 100 saal mein aayi.
Now the country has a strong shield of 1 billion vaccine doses to fight the biggest pandemic in the last 100 years.
Dose ka majboot suraksha kavach hai.
Rajesh Dare is a healthcare worker at a vaccination centre.
It's like a festival for us as 1 billion doses have been administered, and with the efforts of everyone, the pandemic has been controlled in Maharashtra and the entire country.
The World Health Organization, which relies heavily on India for supplies to its global vaccine sharing platform COVAX, congratulated the country for reaching the landmark. After a slow start in January, India's immunization campaign has covered three quarters of its 944 million adults with at least one dose, but only 31% have received both doses. Nearly 90% of the vaccines administered have come from the Serum Institute of India. It produces a licensed version of the AstraZeneca drug. The SII has more than tripled its capacity since April and can now produce 220 million vaccine doses a month. Ministry officials are urging people to get vaccinated fast, especially as the ongoing festival season of family gatherings and mass shopping raises the risk of a new wave of infections.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, President Rodrigo Duterte takes full responsibility for the deaths in his bloody war on drugs. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We're back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines begins the second phase of its COVID-19 vaccination for minors. The country's upkeep warns the public against gathering in huge numbers, as this could lead to another COVID-19 surge. And formerly pharmaceuticals executive Mohit Dargani accuses the Senate of treating them like criminals. Back with more news, the League of Provinces in the Philippines once again asking the national government to defer the implementation of the COVID-19 alert system outside Metro Manila until the end of the month. The group's president says local authorities need more time to study and disseminate the new guidelines to their constituents. The call comes even as national officials insist local governments were properly consulted about the shift to the alert level system.
Sa tingin naman po namin ay okay naman po yung alert level system, pero syempre nga po, pag yung ganyang uniform rule ay maari pong iba-iba ang aplikasyon niyan sa iba't ibang lalawigan kasi po iba-iba yung condition po sa kanya-kanyang teritoryo. At yung nga po, ang hinihiling din po natin ay tama po yun. Kailangan pong konsultihin po talaga lahat yung mga maapektuhan. Hinihiling talaga din ng mga local government units ay mabigyan sila ng mas malawak na powers or authority para po sila yung naglalagay ng mga measures or protocols na ugma doon sa kanilang territorial jurisdiction.
The group is also calling on the national government to increase vaccine allocations for the provinces. Philippine health officials say COVID-19 cases in all regions in the country are now on the downward trend. On Thursday, new infections fell below 5,000 for a third straight day. It was also the fourth day in a row that the number of active cases remained below 70,000. 260 new deaths were also reported. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III says if this downward trend continues, the National Capital Region can expect a lower alert level by December.
This will continue, and a downward trend becomes more definitive, so that we'll be able to de-escalate from our current alert level 3 down to alert level 2 and hopefully alert level 1 by end to about first week of December.
But Duque also gave this warning. As more people head to public spaces like shopping malls and the Dolomite Beach in Manila.
Our super spreader events, this is a potential for a possible surge in the future, maybe 4-6 months. But hopefully we continue to discipline ourselves and comply with the minimum public health standards of face shield, face mask, and social distancing.
Formerly pharmaceuticals executive Mohit Dargani accuses the Senate of treating him and other witnesses like criminals. Dargani has evaded arrest by the Senate Sergeant at Arms after being cited in contempt. He says they are being falsely accused and being used for politics. Dargani also slamming the Senate for ordering their arrest. He claims they've been cooperating with a Senate probe on formerly's multi-billion peso pandemic supply deals with the government. Senate President Vicente Soto III, however, disagrees and tells Dargani to read up on the Constitution. Dargani and his sister, Twinkle, were cited in contempt and ordered arrested after failing to provide documents of their government contracts for medical supplies. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte taking full responsibility for his bloody war on drugs. The much maligned campaign is now under the scrutiny of the International Criminal Court. On Thursday, Duterte revealed that presidential bet and Senator Ronald Bato de la Rosa was growing anxious about the ICC probe. De la Rosa was Duterte's former police chief and the architect of the anti-narcotics crackdown.
Si Bato na nervyos kasi kasali siya doon sa tukhang niya. Digo, huwag kang mag-alala. If there is any person who is going to prison, it would be me. But it should be a Filipino court manned by a Filipino judge and me prosecuted by a Filipino prosecutor. At magpakulong ako dito sa marami namang penal colonies, doon na lang ako.
President Duterte's statement comes a day after the Philippine Justice Department released a review of the alleged summary executions committed by policemen under that drug war. ...2022 presidential aspirant Leody de Guzman seeking justice for the victims of the war on drugs. The labor leader asserts everyone involved in the bloody campaign must be punished.
Talagang dapat panagutin at imbestigahan yung lahat ng kaso ng pagpatay dito sa panahon ni Pangulong Duterte. At panagutin yung mga may mga kasangkot, mga kasabwat at mga nag-implement ng pagpatay doon sa mga na hindi dumaan sa mga due process. Dapat matuklasan yan, maipalabas yan, at panagutin talaga, makulong yung dapat makulong, at para mabigyan ng hustisya yung ating mga yung mga kababayan na naging biktima niyan.
Meanwhile, De Guzman's running mate, Walden Bello, comes out swinging against other presidential bets, the dictator's son, Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. in particular. Bello is vowing to put the Marcoses in jail for all the atrocities committed during the martial law period should he and De Guzman win in next year's elections.
These guys are jokers, no? Especially the biggest joke of all is Si Juan, Si Marcos. Okay? This is a family that has raped the country. It has not apologized to the country, okay? And he now wants to rape the country again. Marcos, we're talking about, at least $10 billion, no? Oh. Ang nakuha natin is just several hundred million for the compensation, no? So we need to do that. If we have to jail Bongbong Marcos, and Aimee Marcos for participation in concealment of funds, maybe that's the first thing we will do. No, this guy is running on funds that were extracted violently from the Filipino people. No, I mean, how can we allow that?
Bello also revealed his camp failed to secure a meeting with Vice President Lenny Robredo for possible unification talks.
Claro naman sa amin that she has personal integrity, no, and we respect that, no? And claro naman na tunay siyang opposition, no, at tunay, you know, na anti-Marcos si Lenny, no. The one thing that we're asking for though is dapat naman merong pag-uusap kasi mahalaga itong election na ito. And hindi namin maintindihan na tatlong buwan na naghahanap kami ng meeting with her na wala namang sagot.
Senator Francis Pangilinan says talks to unite the opposition in the upcoming 2022 polls are now over. And with that, the senator says the possibility of him giving way to a more popular and winnable running mate for presidential contender Vice President Lenny Robredo is gone.
We did not expect yung bumabaha ang suporta. No? Talagang ang ating mga kababayan ay, sabi ko nga eh, kung nakakahawa yung takot, nakakahawa din yung tapang.
Pangilinan also says he and Robredo will soon announce their last pick for their senatorial slate. As we reported earlier, the country has begun the second phase of its pediatric COVID-19 vaccination. Our correspondent Vivian Gulia is monitoring developments in Malabon City, and now she joins us live for an update. Viv, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. More than 60 minors, 12 to 17 years old, with comorbidities received their first Pfizer COVID shot here at the Oreta Sports Center in Malabon City. This vaccination site is among the additional sites in Metro Manila, which opened to pediatric COVID vaccination today as part of the expanded rollout. For a mom who had her daughter jabbed this morning, it's an answered prayer. Some are just relieved to finally get additional protection against COVID. There are also vaccine recipients who hope this will soon lead to a return to face-to-face classes. One student here was, in fact, listening to an online lecture throughout the jabbing process. A parent, meanwhile, wishes the government will also consider scheduling weekend vaccinations for minors so they won't have to be excused from online classes. Something the Malabon City government is open to discussing, according to its public information office. Of the 67 children vaccinated against COVID here this morning, one reported high blood pressure after getting jabbed. The child attributes it to initial fear or anxiety, but the blood pressure eventually normalized after a couple of minutes. 30 more minors are scheduled to be vaccinated here today. A quick reminder to children with a COVID jabbing appointment: do not forget to bring an ID and medical certificate as proof of comorbidity. The parent or guardian should also carry an ID and proof of relationship to the child. Meanwhile, those interested to get an appointment should register online and wait for a notice of schedule, because pediatric COVID vaccination sites do not accommodate walk-ins. Carmina, back to you.
Thanks a lot, Vivian Gulia, there joining us live. Take care, Viv. Keep safe. Now, will it be wise to further lower the COVID-19 alert level in Metro Manila heading into the holiday season? Joining us now is Dr. Maricar Limpin. She is, of course, the president of the Philippine College of Physicians. Dr. Limpin, nice to see you again. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon, Carmina, and good afternoon sa ating mga televiewers.
Hey, doctor, help us make sense of things. You have COVID restrictions being eased. You also hear of the situation in other countries wherein they're preparing for another surge. But you also hear of Health Secretary Francisco Duque saying that, you know, warning against huge gatherings. But then you also have government opening up places like the Dolomite Beach, for example, encouraging people to go there. What is the message being given to the public here? Help us make sense of that.
So basically what you're saying, Carmina, is that there is a mixed messaging, no, that is being imparted to the public. And I think this is actually where we need to probably improve on the messaging, no. And although we do agree that there is a reason for the downgrading of the alert level system in the country from level 4 to level 3, because we have seen really dramatic decrease in the number of COVID-19 cases. And in fact, right at this particular time, we have seen in the hospitals, no, here in Metro Manila, that the bed capacity is now at around 60 to 70, maybe not as low as what we are seeing in the DOH data. No? The DOH data reflects about maybe a 45% capacity. I don't think that we are in a 45% capacity, but they are probably at around 60 to 70%, because we still have a lot of cases, no, that we see in any of the hospitals here in Metro Manila. But if you compare it to, from the previous weeks, definitely we have a much improved COVID cases right now, no, in terms of numbers. So really, there is really a big drop. And I think that is the reason why we can really downgrade. Now, what we need to probably do is really impart the message that even with the downgrading of the alert level system, that all Filipinos must still maintain the minimum health standards. Now, we cannot actually afford to not be able to comply with the minimum health standard, because once we violate or we compromise the minimum health protocols that we are using right now, then I'm afraid that we might actually see rather a gloomy Christmas or maybe a gloomy New Year, compared to what we are thinking, that we will probably have a better Christmas and a better New Year. So I think it is really up to the Filipinos to maintain the minimum health protocols that we are trying to observe.
Because as you said, Dr. Lim Pin, you are seeing some gains. You are seeing some headway. It's decompressing in the hospitals. But you got to move towards sustaining those gains. Better management of public spaces. Would you now call for scheduling? If you are going to open these spaces, maybe just allow a minimum number of people at a certain time, and then let them leave, and then let the other group come in. Is that something that would be welcome?
Yes, actually, if you go to some of the shops in the mall, that is actually being observed. No, so these are being done in the private sector, by the private sector. So, like, let us say, if you want to go to one shop, the shop actually makes sure that there are only a certain number of people who will actually be allowed to go inside. So this is actually one way that by which we can do it. And the public areas, like the Dolomite Beach, they can actually do this. And also, on top of scheduling or allowing only certain number of individuals to go inside the public areas, maybe the local government units or whoever is managing the public areas, they should actually put in more personnel to ensure that all the people who were allowed to go inside will actually be able to maintain the minimum health protocols. So,
Dr. Lim Pin, how dangerous is this mixed messaging that's going around? Considering the gains that you've already seen, would it be easy to sort of lose the momentum if you don't correct the messaging at this point?
Oh, yes. If we don't correct the messaging, very important really is to be able to control the behavior of the people. And key to this is the messaging that we impart to them. And so if we want to really be able to ensure that we see the right behavior, then we really need to push the right message to the people so that they will actually keep it in mind that whenever they go out, they still have to maintain the minimum health protocols.
Dr. Lim Pin, can I ask you about the current situation of our frontliners? And because, as you said, we're seeing some sort of a decompression, but that's in terms of occupancy, yes, right? Yes. But in terms of the well-being of our frontliners, where are we at this point?
Well, we are still seeing some COVID healthcare workers who have experienced being infected from COVID-19. So we still have a number of healthcare workers who are positive and therefore has to be placed on quarantine. And then there are some healthcare workers who were exposed to these positive cases and therefore will have to be placed also on quarantine. So that actually decreases, paved the way for a much reduced number of healthcare workers to address the healthcare needs of the Filipinos. And then also, Carmina, we have to also realize that you know, at this point in time, we are not just taking care of COVID-19 cases, but we are also caring for the non-COVID cases. And we have actually seen a steep rise in the number of non-COVID cases that are being admitted in the hospital. So we now have two problems right in front of us. And we have to make sure that all the patients are being seen and being taken care of in a better way, no, so that we will be able to reduce deaths from not just COVID-19, but also from the non-COVID cases.
Have you taken a deeper dive into the stats, why the rise in non-COVID patients?
Well, yes, because, you know, for the past few months, no, because of the surge, so there was a lockdown, and therefore many of our Filipinos have been quite hesitant to go to the hospital, and therefore some of the diseases that they have, like let us say the cardiovascular diseases and even the chronic lung diseases, so all of the chronic lung diseases were not really given much attention to, and therefore at this particular point in time, we are seeing really deterioration in many of the chronic diseases of our fellow men. And this is really the point in time when they need care, no? And that is why we are now admitting them to the hospital.
Hmm. So their diseases progressed.
Yes,
And how are the frontliners dealing with this? Because, you know, people have this opinion that, okay, you know, the cases are just decreasing in terms of COVID, and therefore you now have a respite from dealing with COVID-19 patients. But you're just telling us now that that's not the case, because there is another rise,
yes,
in patients that are non-COVID.
Yes, that is correct, Carmina. And therefore, what I'd like to impart to our people is that, you know, the healthcare workers do not really have a respite because we have been continuing to giving healthcare services to our fellow men, not just for COVID patients. No. Mm-hmm. So now that we are seeing a decline, but we are now seeing a rise in a lot of the chronic diseases, the non-COVID chronic diseases. So we have to take care of these people. And so basically, we are still continuing to provide the necessary care. No? So there is really no rest for many of us.
Let me ask you, Dr. Limpian, if there, God forbid, if there becomes, if there's another spike in COVID cases, how confident are you that government will be able to react quickly and contain the spread?
Yes. So actually, I think the Department of Health, no, very important is the role of the Department of Health. And we are now, at the time when we are looking and evaluating, you know, the response, the COVID-19 response of the government. And we are actually providing the essential, you know, essential information to the Department of Health to see to it that we will not experience any more surge. No, so what we're saying is there is really a need to keep the DOH, no, on their toes, so that they're not going to relax now that we are seeing a decline, no, in the COVID-19 cases, but that they need to actually really monitor closely the case. And once they see that there is even just a slight increase in the number of COVID-19 cases, they need to put into place already the interventions that is needed to control the further rise in these COVID cases. So,
Dr. Limpian, it looks like the granular lockdown model has been working.
Yes, right. I think it is working. That granular level is working. And we don't even have to, you know, put the entire Metro Manila under lockdown. I think that is one good thing and one good approach that we have adopted. And that is something that we can adopt. But there are are also several things that we can do. One of these is improving the communication to the people, because very important, no, as I said, is to control the behavior. And I think the behavior of the Filipinos is the key indicator, or the probably the key to the waxing and the waning of COVID-19 cases. Yeah. So we need to do something about this.
Mm-hmm. And also, doctor, I don't know if you know, you have members also that are reporting to you, members who are in the provinces. Would you know the vaccination rate in the provinces? Because we're still hearing at this point that some go to Manila to have themselves vaccinated because it's not available in their province.
Yes, you are correct, Carmina. And actually, we have already relayed to the Department of Health our worry that there are some provinces, no, whose vaccination rate is really quite low. And if you look at the nearby regions like Region 3 and Region 4A, I think the last time I looked at them, the vaccination rate is only at around 20%.
And these are nearby areas.
Yes. And then if you look at it, many of the people from these nearby areas are actually coming in and out of the Metro Manila. So I think we need to step up the vaccination program in the provinces, no, so that we can actually be able to provide the necessary protection to many of our countrymen, and most importantly, ensure also the equity, no, to the vaccination program.
Before we got you on air, we were also reporting about the COVID sub-variant, and other countries are already concerned about this. What are your thoughts about this? How concerned are you about this COVID sub-variant?
Yes, so I think our concern will be if we will find out that these new variants of the Delta variant will actually cause high transmissibility, and also will have the potential to cause severe COVID-19 cases. No, so I think this will be the main concern. No, but right now we can actually consider this only as a virus of interest, because it has not really been shown to really increase the potential for severe COVID. So, but I think the key here is to closely study the effect, the impact of this new variant, so that when we see that there is increased transmissibility and higher potential for severe infection, then we need to immediately be able to make the necessary intervention. I think the most important here, you know, these are coming from the UK and some other countries. So yes, we need to tighten up our border control, not to people coming from this country, so that we will be able to prevent the influx of these new variants in the country.
So it's not a concern just yet. But you know what's a matter of concern, doctor? It's that other people seem to have this opinion that the pandemic response and this easing of restrictions have been politicized. That's according to some. So now let me ask you, do you share that same opinion? They're saying this because they're saying the context is the upcoming elections. They say there's an easing of restrictions now, and it's sort of a way to court the voters' vote. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the easing up of restrictions is really do have a basis, no? So as I said, there is a dramatic reduction in the cases of COVID-19. So I don't think that there is something political about the easing up of restriction. But I think that we need to put into place certain interventions so that we will be able to ensure that there will be no more surge. So I think that is the key here for us to be able to expect a better future, no? So prevention of another surge. So that will all depend upon the Department of Health.
You also came out with a statement, right? A statement of indignation, and you've called on government officials to act regarding the ongoing Senate Blue Ribbon Committee investigation. Malacañang is calling it an investigation in aid of election. But you've also come out and called for the impartial and speedy resolution of that inquiry. With the initial preliminary findings that the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee chairman came out with just a couple of days back, what are your thoughts on that? And do you share the opinion that it's actually an investigation in aid of election and nothing else?
Well, I think at this point in time, we cannot actually really call this as an inquiry in aid of election. No, but probably we really have to respect the role of the Senate as far as being able to conduct an inquiry in aid of legislation. But probably later on, we will know if this is in aid of legislation or in aid of election. What do I mean by this? So we expect that, like, let us say, if the Senate inquiry finds that there is sufficient evidence not to that there is corruption, then they can probably stop the inquiry and then pass it on to the Department of Justice, no, so that proper actions will be taken and then maybe a filing of cases can be done at the ombudsman. So that will actually be able to help. But that is all is still not really an assurance that it is in aid of legislation. So the other thing that I am looking forward to is that for the Congress to be able to come up with some legislations on how they can prevent similar things from happening in the future. So maybe putting out legislation in terms of removing, no, the transfer of the procurement from one agency to the Department of Budget and Management, particularly if it will refer to, like, let us say, health supplies. So right. That has to remain within the DOH and not transferred to the DBM. So I think there should be an legislation that has to come out of this. And if there is no legislation that will come out from this, then that's the time that we will call this as inquiry in aid of election.
Let me tell you about the conversation that I had with Dr. Esperanza Cabral yesterday. On this program, she said that when she was consulting with the DOH prior to this pandemic, but within this administration, that's when she first came to know of the PSDBM actually initiating, it came from them, initiating the purchase of CT scans and other equipment. And that cost that raised a red flag. What do you think about this practice of that office?
Yes, so I cannot understand why DBM will do that, because number one, they do not have the expertise as far as all these medical supplies, medical equipments are concerned. So how can they now assure that whatever they will be able to purchase will come up with the necessary specifications that are needed by the end user? So I think we need to put a stop to this kind of a practice, because this is not a best practice. Okay, so we need to again bring back the procurement process, the bidding process, to the Department of Health.
And finally, you know, all these things that we talked about, this should form, you know, part of the platform of every single contender that's going to face the nation come next year. I mean, make no mistake about it. They're going to talk about the pandemic, but I want to know from you, Dr. Lim Pin, what are your non-negotiables? What do you want to hear in their health agenda that would tell you that they are serious about getting the country out of this mess and putting the nation on that path to recovery?
Yes, number one, no, I would like to hear from the contenders, no, what are their health agenda as far as containing the pandemic, not just the current pandemic that we are in, but also in the next pandemic that we will probably encounter in the future. So that is something that we need to look into. And then also, I'd like to hear from them. What is their agenda as far as the implementation of universal healthcare? You know, because of the pandemic, the universal healthcare implementation has actually been delayed. No, so it's supposed to be started within this year, but it probably will be started by next year. So I want to know, what are the plans, what are the steps to be taken by the contender with regards to the implementation of universal healthcare and making sure that the money that is allocated for the universal healthcare will really go to the people and not just on the pockets of some of the local chief executives. Remember, Carmina, a big portion of the budget will actually be coming from the LGU. So it will have a health fund. And we want to make sure that that health fund will not be used
for political gains.
Yeah, for political gains, but also it should really be for the health of the people.
Right. On that note, we're going to have to leave it at that. Dr. Maricar Limpin, their president of the Philippine College of Physicians, thank you so much for joining us today. As always, take care and you keep safe.
Yeah, and stay safe too.
Thanks, appreciate it. Moving on, the local government of Marikina City has also started vaccinating minors with comorbidities. ABS-CBN correspondent Bianca Dava now joins us with an update. Bianca, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. The city government of Marikina has started the vaccination for children aged 12 to 17 with comorbidity against COVID-19. But unlike other cities here in Metro Manila, here in Marikina City, the city's sports center was converted into a pediatric vaccination facility. Mayor Marcelino Teodoro said the Department of Health earlier inspected and approved the use of the sports complex for pediatric vaccinations. Teodoro said they have a limited number of hospitals in the city, which are not as spacious as the open-air sports center. The city government also set up a medical room for emergency cases and a separate vaccination area that is compliant with the standards required to administer Pfizer vaccines. The venue is also near, just across, the Amang Rodriguez Memorial Medical Center. Today, 326 minors aged 12 to 17 with comorbidity are set to be vaccinated in Marikina City. They are accompanied by their parents, who have to sign a consent form for the vaccination. Both the parents and the children also undergo an orientation before the actual inoculation. The city government targets to vaccinate some 100,000 minors in the city, those aged 12 to 17, 5,000 of which have comorbidities. Carmina, as we speak, over 300 children have already been vaccinated against COVID-19 here at the Marikina Sports Center. This is just the pilot run, but Mayor Teodoro said the city government can vaccinate up to 1,000 children a day depending on the supply of the vaccines. Once the vaccinations are in full swing, this sports complex will be converted and used exclusively for pediatric vaccinations. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Bianca Dava, there joining us live. Take care, Bianca. Keep safe. Moving on, U.S. House lawmakers vote to hold Steve Bannon, a longtime aide of former President Donald Trump, in contempt for refusing to cooperate on the investigation into the deadly January 6 assault on Capitol Hill. Here's the full story.
The ayes are 229. The nays are 202. The resolution is adopted.
The U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday voted to approve contempt of Congress charges against longtime Trump ally Steve Bannon for refusing to cooperate with a probe into the deadly January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Bannon could now face criminal prosecution. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland will make the final decision. Bannon has refused to comply with subpoenas from the January 6th Select Committee seeking documents and his testimony, citing Trump's insistence, disputed by some legal scholars, that his communications are protected by the legal doctrine of executive privilege. 9 Republicans joined Democrats to recommend the charges against Bannon. Democrat Adam Schiff said no one is above the law.
This is not some theoretical matter. We were here.
We heard the doors breaking, the glass shattering, the cries from outside the chamber, and we saw the bloody results. Either we are all equal before the law or none of us is. This is the essence of our democracy.
The Select Committee argued that Bannon had made statements suggesting he knew ahead of time about extreme events that would take place on January 6th, when Congress was scheduled to certify Joe Biden as the winner of the presidential election. Most of Trump's fellow Republicans in Congress opposed creating either an independent commission or a select committee to investigate the attack. Republican Jim Jordan blasted the probe from the House floor.
I mean, now Steve Bannon. Mr. Bannon is a target of the investigation, for the investigation, because, quote, this is from the Select Committee's own report, quote, his efforts to plan political activity, that's the standard. You're involved in political activity, they're going to investigate you. We know what this is really about. This is about getting at President Trump.
The Democratic-led panel hopes the threat of jail time, contempt of Congress, carries a penalty of up to 1 year in prison and a $100,000 fine, encourages cooperation from the 18 other Trump aides and rally organizers who have also been subpoenaed. As for Bannon, Attorney General Garland has yet to indicate how the DOJ will respond.
In sports, after showing the Brooklyn Nets who's boss on opening night, it was the turn of the defending NBA champions Milwaukee Bucks to get pummeled. The Miami Heat delivered a statement win, routing the Bucks by 42 points in the first game of the season. Miami raced to a 4-17 lead in the first quarter and kept on putting the pressure on Milwaukee. Tyler Hero led a balanced attack by the Heat with 27 points off the bench. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.